One of the biggest things that has jumped out to me during this season's NFL combine training, so January to the middle of March-ish for all of the ex-college football players trying to make it to the next level, has been our peanut gallery at the end of our speed training sessions. So what that means is, as we go throughout our speed training session, 5 days a week, simply trying to get faster, we go through our warm-up, our drills, correctives, focusing on that one specific skill of the day. And when it comes time to the end, when it's time for the contrast sprints, the timed sprints where the athletes are just supposed to put it all together, we have what we call the peanut gallery because the guys run one at a time. We have all of the coaches kind of at the 5-10 yard line watching from the side. And it's so interesting to have an athlete do a sprint and we all just go, that just like wasn't the one, or like they were close, but they just couldn't put it all together. But then on the flip side, after some coaching, after a few weeks of training, when athletes really start to click and it gets put all together, they do simply just a 10-yard sprint, a 15-yard sprint, and we go, oh man, that was the one right there. That was sweet. Or like that rhythm was just so much better on that one. And that's going to be the premise as I'm talking about the hardest part of speed training and getting faster. Well, first, let's set the scene with our speed training definition. So when we say speed training, we all know what that means just in theory, right? We're all out here trying to get faster. But if you had to put it in a single concise sentence, what would it mean? And this is a definition that we've worked on at work for a little bit, and we think does a pretty good job of it. So speed training is the training of sprint mechanics, and within mechanics, there's shapes, patterns, and rhythms. So the training of sprint mechanics and maximizing force vectors, and vector just means direction and magnitude, and maximizing force vectors across starting positions, acceleration, and transitioning to max velocity sprinting that leads to significant and measurable improvements in speed. So we have to become a better sprinter with our mechanics. We have to hit the ground harder and also in the best direction. And we can do this for starting, accelerating, transitioning, max velocity. But at the end of the day, we have to actually get faster. But what I think is the hardest part and the point of this podcast is discussing the patterns, the rhythms, and the maximizing of the force vectors. So sprint mechanics shapes relatively easy, being able to quantify your speed getting faster relatively easy, but what is that missing link or the things that might not be as objective? So kind of within that definition, and also stuff that we kind of talk about on staff at TC Boost, is there's kind of three main parts to running. So there's force, how hard are you hitting the ground? Mechanics, so how are you hitting the ground? And there's rhythm and time, you're kind of putting together a cyclical rhythm of a sprint of step, 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 the transition, going from low heel recovery to high heel recovery, whatever it may be. So this is kind of the big triangle that sets the stage as well as the force, mechanics, and the rhythm and timing of a sprint. But if it was just as simple as getting stronger, people would just do that. And stronger people would be faster. If it was just as simple as improving mechanics, well, everyone would look picture perfect in their sprints. We would have a super objective technical model. Now, we have things that everyone should try to look like-ish, but you have plenty of examples, plenty of gold medalists that quote-unquote like break the mold or don't have that picture-perfect technique. So if it's not just about getting stronger, and if it's not just about getting relatively agreed upon better sprint mechanics, then what's the missing link? So if we go back to our triangle, so force is hitting the ground hard, right? So if you hit the ground harder, it hits you back. Physics, that's just basically how strong you are. Mechanics, you have to hit the ground well, so hit it in the right direction. So this is the force vector. So force is like the magnitude, and then mechanics is the direction of the force. But rhythm and timing is putting it all together, maximizing the summation of the foot strike, the ankle, the knee, the hip, the counter rotation of the arms, all of those things coming together and summating into a super high output. And an example to illustrate the summation, if you think about a clean, right? You need certain timing and certain extension of certain body parts. You don't want to rise too fast with the chest. You don't want the hips to rise too fast as well. The bars to be in a certain area. And you can tell when you groove a clean or a snatch very well, as opposed to when you miss one, right? And it's relatively simple to say like, oh, your arms were too quick on that, or your shoulders didn't, the second pull happened a little bit too late, or you were late on the catch, whatever it may be. So we know that in other skills, let's say throwing a baseball, right? You have to push off the mound. You have to land on your lead leg. You have to start to extend that knee, rotate the hips, and it goes up and then up the body from the foot, hips, core, shoulder, elbow, and hand to throw a baseball very, very hard. And it's the same idea for sprinting. We have to hit the ground hard. We got to hit it well, but also we have to put it all together. And that's the rhythm and timing. And if you haven't guessed by now, that's what this podcast is about. Going back to this triangle, why, as we've discussed on staff, is I can't create or I can't take all of the credit for this idea. It's the product of many conversations. It is force is the easiest to quantify, right? How much weight is on the bar? Is it more than before? Is it more than the other person, right? On force plates, who has the best iso mid thigh pull? It's just very objective to say there is more force, right? Mechanics, I would say medium difficulty to quantify, right? You can do things like video analysis. You can draw angles on thigh splits and hip flexion and things like that. You can do flight times, ground times. So maybe a little bit more challenging, but still pretty objective, right? We have consistent ways to measure sprint mechanics. But part of the reason why this is the hardest part about speed training and sprint development is because the rhythm and timing is the hardest to quantify. So if we go back to the original anecdote that I kind of shared about having the peanut gallery, and we all have this reaction of simply just a 5 to 10 yard sprint of, that wasn't it right there. Or they missed the mark on what we were talking about, versus like, we all just get super excited. We all start clapping, we all start cheering. And it's maybe to the outsider, it looks like the same sprint, right? Or being able to say like, you hung out in your first step, your first exposure, just a split second too long, right? We're talking about things that to 99.9% of the population, they're just not going to be able to see or maybe even comprehend, right? So, because rhythm and timing is mainly going to come from how we quantify or how we put something objective, relatively speaking, we put something on it, right? It's going to come from the coach's eye. And more or less the athletes feel, right? Believe it or not, athletes are sometimes unreliable, but being able to for them to say that one felt better, or I felt this on that. And notice how the term that's coming up is feel, right? The coach saw, the coach felt, the coach heard, the athlete felt. These things are not concrete, right? So when it comes time to saying like they got better at this, well, it's just super subjective in doing so. And when it comes time to sprinting fast, here's another triangle or another list of three. Well, you have to sprint as fast as you can. You should be trying as hard as you can, but the feel should not be 100%. It should be around like 95-ish. That's kind of how I've been coaching of recent, right? There was an athlete who I coached to not be as tight or be a little looser, a little smoother in their runs. And they ask like, why is that important? And in theory, you think, oh, well, that kind of just makes sense, right? And it took me a second, and I actually had to get back to them the next day. But I said, the reason why we don't want to be too tight or why we want to be smooth is because everything works equal and opposite in the body. So if my right shoulder goes into flexion, well, my left hip goes into flexion, and the hands are like the feet, the knees are like the elbows, the hips are like the shoulders, and it's this equal and opposite, right? So if I'm carrying too much tension in my traps, in my shoulders, and I'm shortchanging the range of motion of my arm swing, well, then that's going to shortchange the range of motion and the timing of my leg swing, right? So we need all of these things to summate, to add together when we sprint every stride we take to maximize how much speed we're generating, how fast we're going down the track, because that's what speed is, right? Who can go from point A to B the fastest? So quicker isn't always better. If it was just as fast as going for as many steps per second as possible, well, that's just called high knees, right? We need certain times where it doesn't feel like we're trying as hard as we can, because when we try as hard as we can and the feeling is, oh my gosh, like I'm gonna like break the ground, right, with how hard I'm trying and sprinting. Well, that's when the rhythm and timing gets thrown off. That's when the steps aren't truly maximized, right? Going back to our definition of speed training is maximizing the force vectors. So if we use this triangle of speed, effort, and feel, why this is another hard part about speed training getting faster is coaching is knowing which one to push, right? So it's interesting to compare and contrast between these three, because I've pushed and dialed in, you know, if these are all faucets, you turn some up or down. I go in between all three of these depending on the athlete, right? So there's times with athletes where I'm like, I literally don't care how it looks. I just want you to go as fast as you possibly can. Go put a crazy number on the TV, which basically we run through our timing lasers and then it spits out their time on the TV, or the 10-inch sprint. Like, hey, let's try to hit this certain velocity on our overspeed or in 15, 20 yard resisted excel, whatever it may be. So saying like, I just need you to go, right? And there's times where it's like, homie, you looked like you were, like you sprouted a new neck vein, right? During that sprint, you were trying way, way too hard. And I literally want this to be at 95% effort, right? And then shocker, they run a faster time because they're not trying as hard. They're letting things go through the rhythm and timing to fully summate and kind of add together. And then also, I'll coach the feel. So I have an athlete who is in the CFL. They've played there for 5+ years. And realizing or reflecting on this coaching cue where it's like, I want you to be fast, but patient, right? Because patient doesn't mean slow. I want you to go as fast as you can, but you should feel patient and not rushed. I'm like, does that even make sense? Like if someone told that to me when I was like learning how to like sprint better, would like fast but patient make sense? So there's certain times when you have to push different pieces of this triangle. And that's really what the art of coaching is. Like if athletes could do this all by themselves, then like coaching wouldn't be a thing. As we get into another triangle, and I feel like that's a future podcast of mine, triangles and continuums. But in this process of getting faster, how do we combine the coach's eye and what they thought, what they saw, the athlete's feel, because I think that that's valuable once they can be trusted, right? Once they've done enough reps and they know it feels fast and slow and right and wrong and whatever it may be, but also the sprint times. So if we go back to our speed training definition leads to significant and measurable improvements in speed. Well, anyone can look better at sprinting, but if you run the same times after X amount of training, then like you still didn't accomplish the goal, right? But an analogy that I've also been using of recent, more so with my baseball players, but all athletes can humor me, right? Is if you're at a hitting lesson and your coach wants you to put your hands from here to like all the way up there just to try to work on something, right? What are the odds that you just absolutely whiff and do not hit that next ball? Probably pretty high, right? So speed training is like, we got to take 2 steps forward, maybe 1 step back to work on something, right? Have a few reps of a slower time for it to groove and become natural. And then we can take 2 more steps forward after that. So the sprint times are an awesome way to build buy-in, where if there's a rep that I liked, the athlete liked, but the sprint time wasn't there, perfect, we're on the right track. Let's just groove that. And when it becomes natural, right, we don't have to think as much. That's when the times are going to drop, versus at the end of the day, we just have to sprint faster. Hopefully I've done a decent job of illustrating the importance, but also the challenge of the rhythm and timing of sprinting and how it is very subjective. It takes a lot of hours and sprints watched to develop a coaching eye. Likewise, for the athlete themselves, a lot of sprints done with the intentionality of trying to work on something or the feel or whatever it may be. But if I had to give you a few action items to kind of take away from this to help kind of work on this rhythm and timing component of your own training coaching, first, like, listen to sprints. You know, I'm fortunate enough where I coach that we have a hard indoor track, and it gives awesome feedback and kind of how athletes are hitting the ground and the rhythm as they progress through a 15-yard acceleration or a fly 10 or whatever it may be. So just like play a video back and like close your eyes and just listen to it, and maybe do a sprint trying to be short and choppy, do a sprint trying to like almost bound, right? And kind of compare and contrast between the two. You can try to guess the time before seeing it. And it's not that you're always going to be right. Because there's times that I think athletes grooved it and I'm super excited about it, and it's a little bit slower, right? And there's times where athletes are it looks like it's going to be a little bit slower, but they did what we talked about, and it ends up being way faster. But being able to say that to an athlete where it's like, hey, I like that one the best, even though the time wasn't there, and they said, oh, me too, I like that one the best as well, versus on the flip side, they go, oh my gosh, I wasn't even trying. I was like, yeah, that looks super, super easy. And look at the time, look at what happened. So try to guess the time or the speed, however you measure it. You got to watch a lot of sprints. So I think that a lot can be learned from watching the fastest people, obviously, right? So we're in NFL combine season now. So that's been the main talking points of our staff meetings. And it's actually really cool. If you just look up like NFL combine 40-yard dash, they'll like overlay like 2, 3, 4 athletes at a time. And you can kind of compare and contrast, or look up like fastest 60-meter dashes ever. Or if you have a certain sprinter you like Usain Bolt, or I think his name is Marcel Jacobs, the new fastest guy in the world. And just like watch them in slow-mo, XYZ. YouTube, just videos of your own training or your own athletes. Just how much time do you sit and just watching? How much time do you just sit and watch video, right? You can ask other coaches for their opinion. So like, let's say it's a coach on staff with you or a friend across the country. Just be like, hey, you know, like, here's a video of our first sprint during my session with this athlete. Here's the last one. You know, I'd love to for you to try to figure out what we worked on or what got better. So use, you know, your outside resources as well. And then also, I 100% believe in the value of knowing how this stuff feels yourself. So do a sprint and think fast but patient, right? Do a sprint and be like, I'm going to jack up the steps per second, right? I'm going to do short wickets and try to hit my shapes but be quick. Or I'm going to do crazy long wickets and see how that goes. So whether it's something like a cue that you're thinking about or different drills to try to feel certain things, because sometimes that's the best coaching. This, how do you set yourself up for success and the athlete up for success? Well, keep it as simple as possible and say literally no words besides do this drill well and see how the athlete self-organizes. So don't forget the value of kind of doing the stuff on your own and feeling it, because that way you can talk through it, you can describe it, you can potentially coach it better to the athlete because you know what it should be like, right? I can't relate to a lacrosse player trying to weave their way through traffic, right? But I can relate to a baseball player, a hitter in the box, or a pitcher trying to, you know, pitch, et cetera, because that's what I've done. That's why a lot of my analogies click for my baseball guys, because I was a baseball player. So hopefully that all makes sense. So have fun and run fast.